Orbital One came into sight through the viewport. It was not a battle station, but embedded within the ring of the outer mining facility was a militarized stronghold established by Imperial forces long ago. Two main hangars sufficed to house Shakara's TIE squadrons, along with a small fleet of shuttles and maintenance drones. Within a few short minutes, the cargo shuttle had swept under the hangars and to the smaller executive docking bay, where Shakara disembarked onto a perfectly polished floor, marred only by thruster scars and the boot scuffs of the officers awaiting her. She left Ensign Cassis to tend to the shuttle and strode toward the central access corridor. Three officers trailed her, each rapidly dispensing a series of updates she forced herself to care about. Complaints about the orbital gas mining operations. The civilian workforce was stretched thin after doubling output, and tighter security was reducing productivity. Shortages of equipment requested by the tankers. Updates on the personnel reauthorization initiative she'd requested to weed out infiltrators. Mixed in were reports more relevant to her military experience. Squadron 4's summary of its mission to Venex. Fresh charts from the mine layer operating outside Pandem Nye's orbit. Squadron 5's repair and readiness update. But even these came with a reminder of the war's toll and the roles she and others had been forced to assume. Mere weeks ago, it would have been Major Soren Keyes who saw to the squadron's readiness and morale. And it would have been Keyes who met her in private afterward and allowed her to speak grimly, frankly, about how dire their circumstances were. She missed that man. She was a good commander, where Soren had been a great leader, and she had trusted him. She would endure. She allowed the reports to continue, relying on her subordinate's ability to prioritize, until she reached the turbo lift to her living quarters and cut the conversations off there. One last question reached her before the door slid shut.
"The people are asking, Colonel. Any word yet from above?"
This from Lieutenant Praertes, who had been aboard the Aerie when it had pursued an enemy frigate through the Ordal Cluster. He'd taken the escape of two of the frigate's starfighters personally, and was eager to redeem himself. So far as Shakara was concerned, the Aerie had done well under trying circumstances. She was content for Praertes to punish himself.
"I'm going to speak to my source presently," Shakara said. "You will know when I have an update."
Her source was waiting for her in her cabin when she emerged from the lift. It stood silent by the door, floating noiselessly and cloaked in red leather and delicate fabric. It possessed the shape of a human, but there was nothing human about it. It was a mockery of life, and the faceless black glass that stared in place of a face was without soul or spark. It was a wraith, the echo of a man who had died not long ago and haunted what remained of the Empire.
"Well?" Shakara asked, turning to stare into the faceless mask. "Do you have new orders?"
It said nothing. She'd have started if it had. But she'd seen it speak once, a short while after Endor, when the chaos ran rampant instead of simmering, and the pursuer had fled purposely through space while the separatist rebel republic took world after world. The Wraith, the messenger, had found her, not the pursuer's captain, but her, and demanded her blood to prove her identity. She'd given it what it wanted. She still had the scar. Then its faceplate had shimmered with the static of a hologram, and Emperor Palpatine had looked upon her for the first and last time.
"Operation Cinder is to begin at once," it had told her in the Emperor's voice, and she'd obeyed.
She had found the operation distasteful, but she hadn't questioned it the way a handful of her pilots had. The Emperor had given the 204th purpose from beyond the grave, honored the fighter wing, along with other units across the galaxy, and set them on their course. Necronis had not deserved destruction, but she trusted the Emperor's messenger that such destruction was necessary. Decades ago, during the Clone Wars, it had been the Republic losing its fight against separatist aggressors and Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, who had ordered distasteful but necessary deeds. He had identified the corruption at the Republic's heart, the religious zealots who called themselves peacekeepers, and expunged them. He had transformed the Republic into an empire and maintained order for over 20 years. She would fight on as long as she could. She would ready Pendam Nigh for battle and offer aid to the scattered Imperial armadas. She would take the role of bureaucrat and charismatic leader and mass murderer if that was what victory demanded. If that was what she had to do to survive long enough for the Emperor's next orders to come. "No one else understands as he did," she said to the messenger. No admiral had managed to unite the divided fleet with a plan to save the galaxy. No successor had emerged to take the Emperor's throne. "We will need more guidance, sooner or later." It said nothing. She wondered how much farther the Empire would fall before it began to win again. Chapter 9. Delusions of Grandeur. 1. The Planet Killer filled the viewport, a world's worth of ashen metal and mad weapons that dissolved in streaks around the edges, like a smudged painting of a battle station. Even unfinished, it was an obscenity, an utterance screamed by a murderous emperor at a galaxy that dared defy him, and a rebuke of the rebel blood shed to destroy the first Death Star. Chas stared at the abomination and felt rage mingle with disgust.
"The objective is inside the superstructure. The shield is down. Kairos will deliver the payload."
Quell's voice came through the comm, crisp and passionless. Chas was starting to get used to that tone from her new commanding officer. Not Hound Leader's masked fear or Renunja's cult leader egotism, but a machine-like determination to see the mission through.
"Shield's not supposed to be down," Chas said. "Ask Will." "It's down now,"
Quell replied.
"Go."
Chas's B-wing rattled as she opened the throttle, though it rattled wrong. Her seat heaved instead of trembling, and there was no ringing glass trill from the panel behind her head. If she'd had her music, she could have ignored the flaws, but the simulator didn't permit music. Quell probably didn't permit music either, but Quell didn't have to know.
"She's right,"
Will said. His voice was distant, lost in a memory he didn't deserve.
"It wasn't like this."
"Count ourselves lucky, then,"
Nath returned. Chas had recognized the sort of man Nath was the first time he'd grinned at her. She hadn't had a reason to reconsider yet. They flew in a wide formation into the heart of the conflict. Emerald and crimson particle bolts streamed across Chas's field of vision, punctuated by the flickers of distant explosions as rebels died and died again. Or would have, if those deaths hadn't been cheap imitations of something meaningful. The Planet Killer's super laser erupted, and the whole universe turned a pustulant green. Chas flew to the beat of her pulse, letting the rhythm tell her when to veer and when to rotate the gyroscopic body of her craft. TIE fighters flew in masses toward her, and she fired restlessly into the swarm. These TIEs died more easily than the ones that had chased the Hellions Dare, and she found only a dull satisfaction as they burst into component molecules.
"Tenzin, where are you?"
Quell called. Chas didn't see Nath on the scanner. Will was weaving around her, his faster A-wing circling like a hound protecting its master. She tried to pull away. Kairos lagged behind, exposed to an attack from the rear, but, well, Quell could deal with that. What was the point of the exercise if it wasn't challenging?
"Tenzin!"
Quell yelled again.
"Trust me,"
Nath said. Chas could see the surface of the battle station now. The details weren't perfect. Identical chunks of weapons towers and sensors and deflectors repeated over and over. But as fire raged around her, she tried to imagine how it had really been. For pilots like, don't think about Will, Satanique. She tried to place herself in the battle, fighting the same abomination that had risen once before. Fighting the monster that heroes at Scarif had sacrificed everything to defeat. She couldn't do it. The battle was a lie. The particle bolts flickered in and out, transparently false. TIE fighters ceased to exist. Her ship whined in ways a real B-wing never would. She screamed in frustration as Will made confused sounds, and Quell shouted pointless orders. Her ship was enveloped in fire. She'd been hit, but she didn't care. The viewport went white, then black, and Chas was sitting in the sphere of a simulator pod.
"The hell was that?"
she asked.
"Call it a win,"
Nath said over the link.
"The Death Star is gone, and only one of us died."
Nath had broken the simulation. Whether he'd cheated was open to debate. The program wasn't meant for anything as complex as the Battle of Endor, and Nath had increased the complexity by straying from the planned flight path.
"More than one way into the reactor," he'd explained afterward. "So why go the route the enemy's prepared for?"
The computer, desperately trying to calculate the positions of hundreds of TIE fighters and thousands of particle bolts in proximity to all five living participants, had reduced the TIE's already dim artificial intelligence, stuttered as it tried to maintain fidelity, and finally crashed outright. But if breaking the program was Nath's fault, it was Will's fault they were stuck with simulators in the first place. Will was the one who'd gotten his ship busted at the minefield. His idiocy had persuaded General Syndulla that the squadron couldn't be trusted in the field, and Quell had gone along with it. "We wouldn't be here if not for Will," Chas thought. It was true in so many ways. They stood together under the black spheres of the simulator pods in the Lodestar's repurposed clone trooper barracks. Quell's face twisted with Imperial arrogance as she barked,
"Are you clever?
Yes, you've all proved it. But the point was to show we could complete this the right way." Nath stood at ease, observing Quell with what might have been a sympathetic smile.
"In that case, Battle of Endor might have been ambitious. The right way needs a different squadron makeup, and we can all tell those TIEs aren't real. Chas shot them down like decoys, and Will was playing to the pre-programmed blast patterns."
"I wasn't," Will said, surprised.
"Sure you were," Nath said. "Maybe it was instinct, but you saw what was random and what was repeating. You could have kept that up for an hour."
Quell scowled at Nath, staring up at the taller man. "I take your point, but I still can't take these results to General Syndulla, and I don't need your suggestions, not now." Chas snickered. Quell didn't look at her. "We're done," Quell said. "I've booked another run in the simulator tomorrow. Expect an operational summary tonight. Pre-flight briefing starts at 0900.
"Ma'am, why?"
Will's back was straight and his eyes were on Quell. Chas saw him struggle with how to treat his commander. He wasn't used to so much formality, but he was mirroring her demeanor as best he could. Calming her, intentionally or just by instinct.
"We've been working hard on the 204th tactical analysis. Why aren't we simulating them?"
It wasn't a bad question. How many hours had Chas spent locked up with Will and Quell and Nath talking about the Shadow Wing capital ship Spiral of Doom and Char's habit of flying solo? She could replay Nath's fight at Trenchinovu in her dreams.
"I've been working on a program," Quell said. "It's not good enough yet." "We have to learn to fight them," Will said.
Quell was a statue. A wind could have eroded her features. "Then,
I'll send you the profiles I'm working up. Personnel files on everyone I can remember. They're not finished. Some are just names. Some don't have anything on flying technique. I don't know who Blink is, but it's something to study."
Quell left without another word. Kairos followed a moment later. Chas hadn't spoken much to the strange woman in the cloak and visor, and Kairos hadn't given her more than a glance. Chas was leaving too when Nath reached her side and said,
"You doing anything?"
He wore the cocky grin of a boy half his age, and almost pulled it off.
"I'm getting out of here," Chas said. "So grab a shower," Nath said. "Or not, and then let's drink until we get our new reading material. Found the place to be after hours, and no one will say we didn't earn it."
"Quell wouldn't say we earned it."
"She won't know, will she?"
He said it with such affected bemusement that Chas laughed despite herself. She knew exactly the kind of man Nath was, and she knew she ought to loathe him as a liar and a snake. Instead, she found his predictability amusing, as if Nath were a con artist pretending to be a con artist as part of his game, playing every note as broad as possible.
"All right," she said. 20 minutes. "Meet outside the B-deck turbo lift," Nath said.
Chas marched out without looking back. The White Book, the Rebel Alliance's military field guide, officially prohibited possession of intoxicants under nearly all circumstances. But individual rebel cells and ships had always done as they pleased, and the White Book was seen as a joke by some and an insult,
an attempt to impose Imperial order on the Rebellion's anarchic coalition, by others. The New Republic was trying to apply its own standards more rigorously, but trying didn't mean doing, and Chas didn't know anyone who read the frequent handbook updates. So she wasn't surprised Nath had found a place to drink aboard the Lodestar. Whether it was permitted only mattered if the captain or General Syndulla found out. She'd changed out of her flight suit and into civvies when she found Nath waiting in the tight, low-ceilinged corridor on B-deck. Will Lark stood beside him, hair wet and gleaming.
"You didn't say he was coming."
Chas jutted a finger toward Will, but didn't look at him.
"Didn't say he wasn't," Nath answered. "Besides," Will added, "Cairo said no, and it's better to have company."
"Are you that much of an idiot?" Chas thought. "Are you that much of an idiot?" Chas said. Will winced, but, to his credit, the expression passed almost before Chas spotted it.
"We've got to try," he said. "What happened with the dare? You're not going to like me, but we have to try. Tell it to Satanique."
Chas pivoted and started to walk away. Even at her height, she had to duck under a power conduit to pass. Before she'd made it 5 meters, she'd turned back and called,
"For the record, I am trying. You know how you can tell?"
Will looked at her with the sad, confused, dumb expression of a hound kicked by its master, like he couldn't comprehend why his provincial charm wasn't reaching her.
"Because you shot me," Chas finished, "and I never shot back."
"So stop clinging to me," she thought, and went to find other drinking partners, better drinking partners, drinking partners lacking the self-involvement seemingly possessed by every human. On a ship full of soldiers, there had to be someone. 2.
"So what's the story between you two?" Nath asked.
Will sat beside the hulk of a man on a couch, worn through to its metal frame, illuminated by the glow of a sign that said, "Ranji's Crate Hut." The sign's meaning wasn't clear to Will, but it wasn't the only mysterious object in the suite that had, Nath claimed, once been the shipboard home of the old Republic senator from Malastare. Over 2 dozen pilots were packed into 3 rooms, most of them out of uniform. A line snaked across the suites to the makeshift bar in the restroom.
"Me and Chas?" Will asked.
"You and Chas? You put a bounty on her pet? Sleep with her boyfriend? She hates you, brother. And you've gotta know why."
"She doesn't hate me. She barely knows me."
He sipped at his drink, mostly foam and water, and wondered how much to share with Nath Tenzant. Will was trusting by nature, but he wasn't naive, and Nath's interest felt more manipulative than empathetic. Yet Nath was part of his squadron now, and he deserved a fair shake. Will managed a tight smile.
"We served together on the dare, but different squadrons. What happened at the end, she blames me for leaving the others behind."
"And for shooting her?"
Nath asked.
"It was a bad day all around," Will said.
Nath laughed as if that explained everything. Will was grateful the man knew when not to press. They both turned their heads as a cheer erupted on the far side of the suite, where a cluster of pilots watched a news screen. Will made out an image of a blue-gray planet, and the word liberation.
"Looks like we got Kerkordia back. Another victory for the New Republic,"
Nath said, raising his glass of wine. Will detected no sarcasm in his voice.
"That's great,"
Will said, and he meant it even as he frowned. The pilots who had cheered wore the determined faces of men and women who saw a shot at salvation.
"So, do you know why everyone acts like we're losing?"
Nath didn't even pause to consider the question.
"You were out of touch a while, right? The dare? Even before we ran into the 204th, yeah. Recon mission, checking on systems that had been cut off. You hear about Cinder before you left?"
"It happened as we were heading out," Will said.
He thought of Shadow Wing and the ruins in the Cronus. Karen Aiden had shown him vivid images captured by New Republic scouts.
"Reports trickled in, but you didn't appreciate the damage till you got back. You were riding that victory feeling for a while."
Nath shrugged.
"Cinder hurt morale, but that's not all of it. Rebellion was always close to losing, and old habits are tough to shake, especially when they're what kept you alive. You think it's just pessimism? Mostly. Sooner or later, though, the New Republic's going to have to remember it's on the offensive.
The offensive, Will echoed. He glanced at the news screen again. He remembered the judgment of the Oridel Cluster, the fate of the Dare.
Winning or not, sometimes it seems like the Empire is doing more damage than we are.
Nath shrugged again.
Imperials are stuck living by old habits, too. You're a philosophical man, Nath Tenzant.
It was a joke, but not insincere. Will tried to decipher the crinkles around the older man's eyes, the faint curve in his lips.
Being on medical leave give you time to think about it all?
Aiden had told Will and Chas that Nath had been injured, and his ship and droid damaged in the fight against Shadow Wing 6 months prior. Nath hadn't spoken of his recuperation, and Will had tried to respect the man's privacy. But Will needed to change the subject, and Nath only waved it away.
Suppose it did. I got pretty comfortable, but whatever mess the rest of the galaxy is in seemed to me like...
He looked about the room, carefully lowered his voice without appearing deliberately discreet.
Well, I've got a grudge against Shadow Wing, same as you. I know what they can do, and it sounded like Aiden and Quell were going after them with or without me. And you'd rather they do it with, Will said. Exactly. I'd like to see the job done right. I won't say I don't want a hand in shooting them down myself, but either way, it's why I don't mind all the tactical planning. Why I put up with this simulation garbage.
Nath downed half his drink in a single swallow.
This is swill. Come on, you want to see how your ship's faring?
Will had, in fact, been wondering about his starfighter. They left the makeshift cantina for the hangar bay, and as they walked, the conversation turned to trivial things. First, jests about the A-Wing and Nath's aging bomber. Then stories about old comrades and past battles and rebel leaders. They stumbled into Nath's astromech droid, a C-1 series unit, creakier than his ship, whom Will embraced and chattered at like a long-lost brother, while the droid muttered and warbled.
Don't patronize the old bastard, Nath said,
giving the droid's chassis a solid kick. But T-5 vented hot air and trailed Will as they continued on their way. Soon they were strolling among crates and toolboxes, and half the night had gone by. Will realized that he regretted none of it. He hadn't spoken to much of anyone since escaping Oridel.
Chas wouldn't talk to him.
Cairn Aiden had briefed and debriefed him. Quell was focused on business. And there hadn't been opportunities to socialize with the crew of the buried treasure or the Lodestar. No, that wasn't true. There had been opportunities. Will had avoided them, after losing Satanique and Renunja and Nazi and Zonagari. After failing his friends and squadron and ship. What could he say when someone asked, "Where was your last posting?" He hadn't had the courage for that conversation. With Nath Tenzant, he didn't need to. The man expected nothing. After midnight, shipboard time, they said their goodbyes. Will stepped back, ready to depart, when Nath said,
"Does it bother you, what she did today?"
"Chas?" Will asked.
"Quell. The Andor simulation. You were there for the real thing. I know I'd be a mess if someone popped me back to Boz Pity, made me watch a few of my friends die."
Will nodded. The simulation had troubled him. But he'd set the notion aside, ignored the ghosts of Riot Squadron.
"I'm sure she meant well." "Probably. Seemed to mess with Chas's head too. Don't know why."
Nath snorted and clapped his hands together.
"Maybe I'm overthinking it, but there's something off about Quell. It's not the Imperial style. I was an imp pilot myself once, but something else. Too focused on the mission, or not focused enough." "She was part of Shadow Wing," Will said. "Maybe she feels she has something to prove."
"Maybe, but just keep an eye out, okay? Meanwhile, the rest of us can look out for each other. Got to get flying before the fleet hits Pandem Nye, or who knows what we'll miss."
Will considered the man before him, trying and failing to separate self-interest and truth. Maybe with Nath, he thought. They're one and the same.
"For you and for Chas, I'll absolutely keep an eye out," Will said. "If you can win over Kairos, let me know."
3. Erica Quell watched Cairn Aiden pace across the ready room, buried deep in his rumpled coat. They'd commandeered the place from Meteor Squadron, while that squadron was deployed to Chazwa, and Quell struggled not to gaze at the mementos pinned to the walls, or read the notices displayed on the seat consoles. She kept her eyes off the graffiti etched into her chair's armrest. The ready room told the story of two wars, and she wanted to escape into the tale, submerge herself in the history of the Lodestar and its pilots, instead of wrestling with the unpleasant reality before her, instead of keeping her eyes on her superior officer. Had Major Keyes ever felt so alone at a briefing aboard the Pursuer? She doubted it.
New Republic intelligence, Aiden was saying, has tasked additional stations with flagging intercepted communications concerning Pandem Nai. We're still not picking up much, but we're hoping to learn more soon about the 204th garrison. Our latest guess is that the Star Destroyer Pursuer is not operational in system, but it's possible additional capital ships have been deployed.
She noticed him taking care to meet the eyes of his audience, to look directly at Tenzint, Lark, and even Kairos. He lingered on the empty space where Chaddock should have been. The Thielen girl hadn't shown for the status meeting, and Quell had made an excuse rather than admit that Chaddock was tardy.
General Syndulla's fleet, Aiden went on, may be in position to strike in as few as 3 weeks, based on our previous estimates and our progress over the past several days. We have until then to gather additional intelligence on Shadow Wing and determine what vulnerabilities exist in Pandem Nai's defenses.
He paused at the appropriate times. He did all he could to make scanty findings sound more momentous than they were.
We can assume they know we're coming, Quell added.
The squadrons that destroyed the Hellion's Dare are almost certainly out of the Auradel cluster by now, and they will have reported the escape of two rebel, New Republic, starfighters. But knowing Colonel Nerys, she'd be preparing for the worst anyway. So we need to determine not just what their defenses are now, but what they can construct while we're on the march. Lark spoke up, cautious as he asked,
Are we assuming they're entrenching for a siege? Or could Shadow Wing plan to grab as much Tabana gas as it can, and then move on? Stay mobile.
Aiden's lips twitched in a suppressed wince.
Quell, you're the behavioral specialist. What are the odds they're gone before we get there?
She didn't know. She didn't like answering questions she didn't know in front of her squadron. Nor did she like admitting ignorance to the man who controlled her fate. We think they've been stationed at Pandem Nai for almost a month, she said. If they wanted to stay mobile, I think they'd be gone by now. But I can't be sure.
What about their other operations?
Tenzin shifted his bulk in his seat, glancing to his console.
Any update on whether they're sending sorties out of the system?
He asked this of Aiden, but Aiden again looked to Quell. I don't know, she said. Aiden, have you heard anything about additional operations?
I haven't, Aiden said.
Quell reviewed her mental model for anything that might offer a clue. What about transport capabilities? She asked. If we knew how many cruiser carriers were at Pandem Nai before...
We don't, Aiden snapped. New Republic intelligence accepts that Shadow Wing is a priority, but there's a whole galaxy on fire right now. You know what I know.
Quell bit back a retort and nodded. Aiden wasn't finished, though.
The entire intelligence working group on Shadow Wing is in this room. My assumption was that by this time, you'd be conducting tailored reconnaissance and planting tracking devices on Imperial supply convoys. Instead, I had to tutor Meteor Squadron on what to watch for at Chazwa, and why we should try to preserve local fuel samples to see if they came from Pandem Nai.
He let his gaze slip from Quell, scanning the room before returning.
I didn't count on you needing the better part of a month to get your team operational.
Quell didn't flinch. She didn't say a word. Aiden was a bastard, but he was in command, and he was right. She'd earned herself a squadron, and now she was proving herself incapable of leading it. Shortly afterward, Aiden adjourned the status meeting. Quell excused herself and went hunting for Chaddock. The search took her most of an hour. She went deck by deck, compartment by compartment, asking brusque questions of engineers and officers and droids. She didn't talk to the Lodestar's other pilots. She'd heard enough sneering about the alphabet's worth of ships dropped aboard by New Republic intelligence. and she didn't care to damage her working group's reputation further. But she walked through the hangar, eyes open and searching. Sergeant Ragnall, the tattooed engineer, greeted Quell with a polite wave, before turning to scream obscenities at a droid dragging a repulsor sled loaded with heavy ordnance. By the time Quell finally located Chasna Chaddick, she'd pushed her failure in the ready room to the back of her brain and kindled her fury at her missing squadron member. In the medical bay, Chaddick stood at the bedside of a man with leathery yellow skin and a bandage wrapped around his forehead. Three other figures stood with Chaddick, laughing and arguing, all of them in New Republic Special Forces uniforms. Quell stood in the doorway, waiting for Chaddick to notice her. When she didn't turn, Quell approached. "Friend of yours?" Quell asked. Chaddick pivoted toward Quell, snorted, then looked back to the man in the bed. "Bad friend to have," she said. "Man's a jinx."
"To you, the man's a hero."
One of the upright soldiers, a human with a black beard that extended to his stomach, growled the words without looking at Chaddick.
"You've got to earn the right to call him a jinx."
"Dirt sucker," Chaddick muttered.
"Spit racer," the man returned.
Quell wrapped her fingers around Chaddick's upper arm and tugged her away from the bed. The three Spec Force troopers, along with their wounded companion, observed but said nothing. Chaddick hissed her own objection as they stumbled to the far side of the room, while Quell spoke over her. "You get one chance to tell me where you were. One."
"Dropship was short a co-pilot," Chaddick said. "I was playing backup."
Quell didn't understand at first. Then realization dawned.
"You were gone on a Spec Force mission? You volunteered for other duties?"
"Yeah," Chaddick said.
Her voice possessed the unbending surety of an Imperial flagstaff. Quell stared at the compact young woman before her. "In the 204th, she wanted to say, "you'd have been stripped of your rank and shipped to a military prison. A pilot fresh from the academy would fill your seat and never hear your name." Chaddick gazed back. Quell's rage seemed to break against her speckled face and strong chin.
"In the Empire," Quell said, not meaning to, "you'd be shot for treason." "The Empire lost," Chaddick said, unmoved. "Something happened in the status meeting I actually needed to know? Or are we still sucking our thumbs and waiting for Syndulla to say we can fly?"
Quell had never harmed a subordinate before, not like a dozen commanders she'd known in her career, who answered disobedience or failure with thrashings. She prided herself on her calm and reason. Yet she watched herself, as if from afar, as she grabbed Chaddick and swung her into the wall and said,
"You're only alive because of me. You're in this squadron because of me. If I tell you to suck your thumb, that's what you do."
Four strong hands caught her arms and shirt. Firmly, but not roughly, they pulled her away from Chaddick. Quell didn't struggle as a voice said,
"She saved the Jinx's life."
Chaddick squeezed her hands into fists, then released.
"So are you kicking me out?" she asked. "Are we done?"
The hands released Quell. She didn't look back at the Spec Force troopers. Chaddick's words, smug and confident, echoed in her mind. They mixed with Aiden's arrogance and her own certainty that she was failing her squadron.
"No more unauthorized flights. We've got a mission coming up," Quell lied. "If you're not ready, you never hear about the 204th again. If that doesn't matter to you..."
Chasna Chaddick saluted. She saluted, swinging her hand to her horned temple and her shock of hair, showing teeth in a grin or a snarl.
"Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir."
Quell left the medbay and the infuriating Thielen behind. Her mind drifted to the yellow-skinned man in the bed and the words, "She saved the Jinx's life." She had to find a mission for her squadron, something Syndulla would approve, even if it was outside a combat zone. Simulations and drills would destroy them by the time they proved themselves. And Chaddick was only the first sign of trouble. 4. Nath recognized the fatigue in Quell as easily as he'd spotted Aiden's opportunism and Will's sense of righteousness, as easily as he'd recognized that the Empire was just a shinier place for the same thugs and gangsters he'd grown up with. His new squadron commander was so desperate to prove herself that she was working herself to a hollow shell.
She hadn't been at her best at the last status meeting with Aiden, and she'd grown worse daily. Her eyes were bloodshot and her voice was husky. She'd gained a ragged edge during drills, and Nath had followed her one night to find her slumped over a table listening to a headset. He wondered if she was taking stimulants, and if so, whether the torture droid was providing them. He wasn't sympathetic. Quell loathed him, seeing him as a reminder of her own moral failings. Where he'd been a rebel for years, she was still desperate to show she wasn't an Imperial spy. But Nath wasn't ready to see her fall apart either. She was his best route to Shadowwing. He needed to find Shadowwing. He'd made the bet and put everything at stake. He just chose not to show his desperation the way Quell did. Nath's routine kept him busy 17 hours a day, even when the squadron, Alphabet Squadron, the Lodestar's pilots called it with a snicker, demanded fewer. Early mornings were for study. He'd never been much of a student. But he knew how to read the documents Aiden sent over on Pandem Nye and Colonel Nares. He reread the debriefing interviews Will and Chas had given on their run-ins with the TIE Wing, and Quell's profiles on squadron leaders like Bruch and Gablerone. While the other troops in his berthing compartment dressed and shouted and ran around like idiots, he sat in his bunk and jotted notes on the people he wanted to die. He missed having his own quarters. He hadn't slept in a shared berth for years. He hadn't had a chance to meditate uninterrupted in weeks. Daytime belonged to Quell and the squadron, or, when the morning drill didn't last long, to his ship and his droid, neither of which he trusted with the Lodestar's engineers. The old Y-Wing had enough custom parts and jury-rigging in its tonnage that even the best mechanic was likely to break something while puttering around. It worried Nath that T-5 had taken a shine to the tattooed engineering chief, but there wasn't much he could do about that. T-5 had listened to Rika and obeyed Ferris out of fear of disassembly. Nath couldn't even wipe the thing's memory, thanks to carbon scoring around the circuits. The drills themselves varied from tense to interminable. On the days when Quell recreated an old encounter between the 204th and rebels or pirates, breaking down tactical decisions moment by moment, the work seemed grueling but the effort well spent. Simulated dogfights, on the other hand, were both frustrating and tedious. The squadron could beat any computerized game, but it meant nothing in real space. And racking up digital kills hadn't persuaded General Syndulla to let them fly again. When evenings rolled around, he engaged in less tangible work. Some days he put a few hours into the Lodestar's crew, in either the mess or the crate hut, eating and drinking and gambling with people who might eventually matter to his survival. He picked out the small-time crooks, a smuggler running contraband, a pilot running a rigged game of liar's dice, but didn't make more than cursory contact with them. He was staying clean for now. Socializing with the troops came second to investing time in the squadron, however. Will Lark didn't trust Nath yet, but the boy liked Nath, and he was too mild-mannered not to listen when Nath planted thoughts in his brain. Chas was more trouble, but she was warming to Nath too. If he worked the two just right, he could keep them from killing each other and count them both as allies against Quell and Aiden. Because although he might have needed Quell, and Aiden might have needed him, Nath wasn't a fool. In her awkward, imperial way, Quell had tried to convince him that he wanted vengeance for Rika, the woman with a face full of scars and a heart even meaner he'd lusted after. Piter, whom he'd practically reared, never less than terrified, usually infuriating, but as trustworthy as any of his crew. Even for Bray, whom Nath had expected to put down himself. Back at the Hive, Quell had offered him the chance to learn the names of their killers and balance the scales, to see justice done. He'd refused, of course. Justice was the vice of bold, honorable men who died swift, stupid deaths, and vengeance was justice without the sheen of respectability. Nath had survived as long as he had by controlling his vices, not letting temptation lure him down suicidal alleys. But he'd let himself take another offer, a better offer, one Quell didn't know about, and he didn't plan on sharing. Now, Nath was committed. He hoped Quell didn't turn out to be more trouble than she was worth. Nath slid into a chair in Meteor Squadron's ready room, two seats to Chas's side and one row behind Will, and slapped a meaty hand on the boy's shoulder.
Want to guess what we're up to today? He asked.
Quell had called them to the briefing without notice.
Probably to see if we'd come running, Nath thought,
knowing he'd done the same thing with his own crew. Quell hadn't arrived yet, which also suggested something. Nath wasn't sure what.
We had an elder back home who said she could see the future, Will said, tilting back his head to look at Nath. I don't have her talents.
One day, Nath said, we're going to talk about your crazy world.
He turned toward the door as he heard the creak of leather and the rustle of cloth. Kairos had arrived, moving to take up a position at the back.
What about you? He called. You want to guess why we're here?
Kairos lowered her head. Nath laughed. Chas snorted. It was a better answer than anyone had expected. Quell arrived a moment later. She looked gaunt enough to cut in half with a paring knife, but she was rigid and proud as ever. Aiden followed her in, giving the room only a cursory glance. After Aiden came a woman Nath didn't recognize at first, a jade-skinned Twi'lek with white-patterned headtails and a confidence that made Quell, in comparison, look like a trembling child. General Hera Syndulla. Legend of the Rebel Alliance. The woman who'd helped free Lothal, survived Scarif, and led the charge at Endor. Commander of the battle group and special guest aboard the Lodestar. If she was making time for a briefing, they were in for very good news. Or very bad. General? Quell asked. Syndulla shook her head.
It's your show, Lieutenant.
Quell showed no surprise as she stepped to the front. Syndulla and Aiden lingered to one side.
The squadron has been authorized, Quell said, for limited non-combat operations. Our first mission has been determined, and we fly in 6 hours.
Nath looked to Syndulla.
Limited non-combat operations meant a trial run.
Syndulla nodded at Quell and said,
the job is recon and asset extraction. I'd send my own people, but as you know, we're short on resources. When this situation was brought to my attention, I agreed that it fell into your area of expertise.
Nath heard the tortured grammar and smirked. When the situation was brought to my attention suggested she didn't want to give credit or spread blame. Quell touched one of the ready room displays, and a series of images flashed on screen. An ancient city flooded by colorful mud, shattered airspeeders and human corpses floating past, a gleaming imperial population center, modern chrome and crimson towers battered and streets silent and lifeless, a village in a field of black grass, residents running from a lightning storm that filled the horizon. Operation Cinder, Quell said. She spoke with the hoarseness of emotions smothered and stomped. You've seen the reports. Most of the targets were saved. Some of them weren't. It'll be years before the full casualty count is known.
Will stiffened in his seat. Chas shifted uncomfortably. Neither had been around to help stop the genocides.
Nath wondered if they felt guilty. Quell kept talking.
For all the horrors of Cinder, however, it gave us useful intelligence. It exposed the enemy's most loyal and ruthless units, marked them by their participation in atrocities. We think that information can be useful.
She nodded to Aiden, who paced as he picked up the briefing. His voice was crisp. He was a man used to persuading audiences of his brilliance.
The Empire is in disarray. That's obvious by the sheer number of splinter factions. We aren't fighting one enemy, but several dozen. Some are isolated by happenstance. Moff Royan's fleet is cut off from support near the Red Hand Cluster. Others, like Adelhard's faction in the Anoet sector, have decided they're better off securing their own territories, and to hell with everyone else. We haven't seen a lot of interfactional warfare, though it's early days yet. So how does this relate to Cinder? You have to imagine that Imperials willing to commit atrocities on the orders of a dead Emperor.
Nath watched Aiden's eyes, but the spy didn't so much as glance at Quell.
Probably feel a level of solidarity. They're loyalists. Even if they're scattered across the galaxy and attached to different factions, they'll look to one another as allies and make contact when possible.
Quell stepped in again. The 204th Imperial Fighter Wing committed a war crime on Cronus. Now they're sitting on a treasure trove at Pandem Nigh. Who are they going to share those resources with?
Who can they trust more than other Cinder veterans?
Nath looked from Quell to Aiden to General Syndulla, searching for a sign of doubt or hesitation. He could accept the logic of Cinder units sticking together, but it was hunch, not operational intelligence.
The planet Abednido, Quell said, was a target of Operation Cinder. Thanks to local resistance and a New Republic Special Forces team, it barely escaped destruction. Following the battle, the Spec Force team relayed that all Imperial units had fled or been destroyed. 5 days ago, a coded transmission was sent from Abednido, suggesting that the strike team was in error, that surviving Imperial forces are still hiding on the planet's surface. It's not the first report to that effect. New Republic intelligence has heard rumors of Imperial holdouts before, but it's the first to come through official channels.
What's the source on this? Nath asked.
Everyone turned to him, and he cut Aiden off before the spy could answer.
No, I know. I'm not cleared for that. Put it this way, how reliable is your source on this?
Not very, Aiden said. We don't have a full ID or background on the sender, but they used the right codes. No specific reason to think the intel isn't valid.
No wonder Syndulla's not bothering to use her own people, Nath thought,
and graciously nodded to Aiden.
She can't possibly believe this is worth pursuing.
Quell grunted softly. The purpose of the mission is, in part, to determine the source's credibility and authenticate their information. We will rendezvous with the source, transport them to the Lodestar, and if possible, perform basic reconnaissance in an effort to locate the Cinder holdouts. General Syndulla stepped forward again.
I've reviewed Lieutenant Quell's plan, and I believe it has merit. Your squadron commander knows what she's doing, and so do all of you. This is what you're best at.
She paused, let the words sink in, then dropped her voice an octave.
I want to be clear, however. You are not authorized for combat operations. You want to prove yourselves. This is your opportunity.
Check your consoles for the flight plan, Quell said. We resume in 15 minutes. Quell, Aiden, and Syndulla exited the briefing room together. Nath saw the general place a hand on Quell's arm, but it could have been a warning as easily as a gesture of support. Will was already reviewing the flight documents, while Chas appeared to be punching them up on her screen with her feet.
This is what they've finally got for us? She muttered.
You figure it's busy work?
Nath asked. He knew the answer. He also knew his audience. Will was the one to reply, which didn't surprise Nath.
I'm more worried we end up killing one another, he said.
That did surprise Nath, and he laughed.
That's dark, brother.
I'm not entirely joking, Will said.
We haven't flown in atmosphere as a squadron. There are a lot of unknowns, and...
Chas was glowering in Will's direction. Will finished with a bitter smile.
Chas wants me dead.
Not true, Chas replied. I just don't care if you live or die.
Then start caring.
Quell's voice, brittle and deadly as glass, broke through the chatter as she returned through the doorway. Will looked chagrined, and his voice softened as he answered Quell.
My fault, but you're asking for a lot of faith.
No, Quell said. I'm not. I'm giving you orders, and I expect to be obeyed. This isn't a volunteer mission.
Chas and Will both looked to Nath, but Nath only shrugged.
Let's look at that flight plan, he said.
He needed Quell, he told himself. He needed her squadron. He had a job to complete. Double or nothing. Chapter 10. Spontaneous Ethical Reconfiguration. 1. From a distance of 400,000 kilometers, Abednido resembled nothing so much as a clod of dirt wrapped in desultory clouds. It possessed no majesty, inspired no awe. For Quell, it was nonetheless her best hope for salvation. She had been the one to dig up the obscure transmission from the New Republic intelligence databanks. She had concocted the strangled reasoning connecting theoretical Abednido holdouts to Shadow Wing. She'd done so knowing that her squadron was falling apart and required something more than simulations to stay together.
she'd done so for her own sake, in response to the longing she'd felt when she'd seen Chaddock return from her Spec Force sojourn. It wasn't likely to work. She was ashamed at how quickly the others had figured it out.
Chaddock, Kairos with me,
she said as D6L adjusted her X-Wing's course toward the southern hemisphere.
Lark and Tenzint, establish geostationary orbit above Nesharino and await further instructions.
Shout if you need us,
Tenzint replied. Quell watched two blips on her scanner peel away, while Chaddock's assault ship and Kairos's transport followed Quell at a respectful distance. If all went well, Lark and Tenzint would never need to make planetfall. The A-Wing would make its scouting pass from orbit, if the opportunity arose. The Y-Wing was there if everything went terribly wrong. The X-Wing trembled as the vessel penetrated the outermost layer of Abenito's atmosphere.
We're in the soup,
Quell announced as she thumbed through messages from the astromech, signals to and from computerized flight controllers in the city of Nesharino, transmitted far faster than she could read. The droid's actions disconcerted her. A TIE pilot had no astromech unit to rely on. She was dependent on her carrier ship and flight controllers to plot her course and choose her dock. A TIE pilot needed to trust her team. Now Quell flew a ship that didn't even need her to function. She thought about Tenzin's ancient T5 droid, and how Tenzin treated it like a member of the squadron, argued with it in the hangar, wandered with it through the corridors of the Lodestar. She'd barely crossed paths with her astromech off-duty. It hadn't seemed to mind. She approved D6L's proposed trajectory and let the droid take her down. The silence of space, broken only by the noise and rattle of the ship, gave way to the roar of wind as the X-Wing cut through gray cloud cover. Temperature controls activated automatically, chilling Quell as the ship's exterior baked in the heat of re-entry. She heard her repulsors thrum to life a moment later, adjusting for the planet's gravity. Nesharino rose out of a mountain range of endless, rust-brown rock. Jagged natural spires stood tipped by ornamental towers, and great cliff faces were carved with painted statuary. A thousand narrow streets and stairwells blurred beneath Quell as she made for one of a series of protruding buttes. There was a beauty to the city, but it was a foreign beauty. Nesharino had been built by a species native to caverns and stone, and no human could ever find comfort there. 10 minutes later, Quell was admiring the stonework up close, walking down a tessellated roadway studded with brightly glazed tiles. Chasna Chaddock strolled toward her from a path leading to a neighboring docking platform, as the wedge-faced, wide-eyed natives scurried on business around them. What are you wearing? Quell asked. Chaddock scrunched her face and glanced down at her asymmetric leathers. Quell wasn't sure if they qualified as fashionable, cheap, or both. She hadn't owned much in the way of cities for a while. Clothes? Chaddock tried. I'm wearing clothes. I thought we weren't trying to draw attention. Quell looked at the navy blue of her own flight suit. The New Republic saved this planet. We're more likely to get what we need like this. Chaddock parted her lips as if ready to laugh, then shook her head. Let's go, New Republic Lieutenant. Quell tried not to bristle. She's egging you on. Respond and you'll just encourage her. She felt like a child again, suffering her brother's torments aboard Gavanna Orbital. Only it wasn't, she realized as Chaddock strode away, her brothers that the Thelan reminded her of. Shoot down that thought. Burn it. Focus on the mission. They swiftly moved from broad boulevards into narrow alleys, so packed with pedestrians that Quell often lost sight of her companion. A faint odor of vanilla and dust and fresh paint pervaded the city. The natural musk of the Abenito people, perhaps. And up close, Quell could see that Nesharino hadn't been unscathed by Operation Cinder after all. Scaffolds shored up cracked cliff faces and statues the height of skyscrapers stood battered and beheaded, cordoned off and surrounded by rubble. In a plaza walled on one side by a mound of boulders, thousands of gemstones painted like beetles had been placed delicately on the ground. Quell knew nothing about the culture of Abenito, but she recognized a memorial when she saw one. She thought of the cargo bay aboard the Pursuer, converted to honor the victims of the terrorist attack on the Death Star. They moved on into Nesharino's House of Strangers, the sector of the city reserved for the use of non-Abenitos, full of travelers' lodgings and cantinas enclosing micro-atmospheres. Quell paused long enough to contact D6L through her comlink and confirm her destination, then led Chaddock back into the maze of alleys until a staircase took them away from the crowds and into the rock of the mountainside. There, holographic flames set in crystal chandeliers lit the way to an intersection of 8 narrow stairways, like wheel spokes. Above the intersection hung an incongruous tarp, covering whatever ancient painting or mosaic had once looked down on pilgrims.
Here? Chaddock asked.
Here, Quell said. They waited. Quell signaled the rest of the squadron and received short replies, indicating that nothing of consequence had occurred. They waited longer. Quell began to wonder if their contact wouldn't show, when a figure emerged from one of the passageways and hobbled toward her. The newcomer's most prominent features were the bulbous, compound eyes set in its insectoid skull. And Quell tried to recall what she knew about the Verpine people, a clannish, intelligent species with a reputation for technical aptitude and an esoteric language. The Verpine adjusted the layers of scarves around its face and made a chittering, squealing noise. It jerked up its left fist and uncurled 2 of 3 fingers to reveal a comlink from which a voice declared,
"You identify Republic, not Abnido. Commiserations and deals to be made."
Quell grimaced. A street trader with a broken protocol droid? "We're waiting for someone. Move along." The Verpine chittered again.
"You identify Republic,"
the comlink repeated, and the insectoid jutted its right hand at Quell's flight suit.
"Responding communication."
Chaddock was pacing the enclosed space and peering down the connecting passages.
"What communication?" she called.
"Communication of Mission Ember. Confirmed."
"Operation Cinder." "Confirmed," Quell said. It was suddenly cold beneath the mountain.
"Deals to be made,"
the Verpine said again.
"Initial transaction to be confirmed. The Republic is understanding, and the monies?"
Quell amended her mental image of the Verpine. A street trader with a broken protocol droid and a handful of New Republic security clearances. Just because the Verpine had sent a coded signal didn't mean it had anything worth selling. This was a situation she hadn't prepared for. She'd expected a member of a local rebel cell at best, a paranoid informant at worst. Once again, she was playing the role of a spy instead of a pilot, and she felt paralyzed. Chaddock must have seen her hesitancy. The Thielen moved between Quell and the Verpine.
"Plenty of noise, but no one's hollering. You want a deal? You give us something to work with. Give us proof, we give you monies."
The Verpine clapped and shook in reply. Quell half expected to see it sneeze, or maybe to see another creature crawl out from between its chitinous plates. Instead, it rapidly squealed and chittered into the comlink. It seemed to hold a whole conversation, before the machine said,
"Merchandise samples provided. Goodwill indicative to Republic government."
Merchandise? But she didn't have to ask. Shuffling footsteps echoed from one of the stairways, and the Verpine pointed a trembling finger at the 2 individuals who descended. The first was an Abednego, burly and simply dressed as he escorted the second. A pale man in bone-white armor, his eyes wide, cheeks bruised, and hands cuffed together. He looked horrifyingly young under the dried blood that framed his mouth. On his shoulder was the white pauldron of an Imperial Stormtrooper sergeant.
"Merchandise sample,"
the Verpine said.
"Take. Take."
The Stormtrooper's eyes locked onto Quell's flight suit and didn't stray. She looked at the grime and scars beneath the fuzz of his hair. He bent forward and seemed unable to straighten. Chaddock swore and looked to Quell. Quell clenched her fists, trying to will herself not to tremble and to focus on her job. She moved until she was close enough to the Stormtrooper that he could have torn her throat with his teeth. "Operation Cinder," she said. Nothing more than that. Quell had never been adept at reading body language, never known how to ask the probing questions an interrogator might. But she recognized the flash of uncertainty in the sergeant's face. The look that said, "It's classified, and anything I say could get me tossed into the brig."
"More merchandise for money's purchase,"
the Verpine said.
"This one take. Goodwill."
"The rest of the merchandise," Quell said. "You can show me?"
Ready? Yes. Ready to show.
Quell stepped away from the stormtrooper and gestured Chaddock to one side. Kairos is waiting, she murmured. Get this. She shifted a shoulder in the stormtrooper's direction. This prisoner to the U-Wing. I want to see what else is for sale.
You don't want backup? Chaddock asked.
She was more focused on Quell than on the stormtrooper. There was no concern in her voice, which might have hurt under other circumstances. I want to get out of here with a win, even if that's just our free sample, she thought. But the words tasted bilious, and she didn't complete the sentence. Chaddock patted the pistol strapped to her side, as if reassuring herself. Like her clothing, the weapon was irregular. Some sort of exotic slug thrower. And, Quell guessed, as illegal under the New Republic as under the Empire.
I'll handle it, Chaddock said.
Quell nodded to the Verpine and left Chaddock, the stormtrooper, and the Verpine's assistant, as the Verpine led the way down a staircase and through another tunnel.
You want to tell me where you found the merchandise? She asked.
The Verpine chattered into the comlink until the droid echoed back.
Profession is traveler. Transporter. Merchandise requests secret non-standard transport off-world.
The merchandise requested transport?
Non-standard transport. Non-standard is specialty.
They passed under an archway and onto a battered stone bridge, spanning the chasm between two cliff faces. Airspeeders hummed above, and the stench of dust and rot rose from below. Quell looked down onto a massive rock slide being picked over by droids and abednitos. More signs of Operation Cinder, perhaps. She tried not to think about it. Non-standard transport, she said. She wasn't sure if it was a euphemism or a poor translation, but either way she guessed it meant smuggling. You were contacted by the merchandise and... They passed into another tunnel and up a staircase, arriving in a broad cavern open to the sky. In the cavern's center sat a Gatrok 690 light freighter, filthy and dented as if it had flown through a sandstorm. Quell recognized the vessel from her youth and tried to think about the agri-hauler who'd often dined with her family, instead of the realization crawling up her spine.
See? Look now. Look.
The ship's loading door slid open, rattling and hissing, and her eyes adjusted to the darkness inside as a reek of sweat and waste mingled with the sickening sweet scent of infected wounds. Scattered around the ship's hold like crates of unsorted salvage were a dozen or more figures in once white armor encrusted with stains. Like the sergeant, each was cuffed, hands behind his or her back. Unlike the sergeant, these were gagged and tethered to support struts and cargo anchors. Many were motionless, asleep or unconscious on the metal deck. Others raised their grimy heads and squinted into the light of the cavern. A green-eyed woman shook hard enough that her cuffs rattled. A gray-haired man shifted protectively to block Quell from the prone figure beside him. In the 204th, Quell's squadron had once disabled a slaver ship. The conditions there had been no worse. These were the holdouts of Abednito, the survivors of Operation Cinder, desperately seeking a way off-world. They'd turned to a smuggler for help, tried to flee, and instead the Verpine had chosen to sell them out to the New Republic. Quell felt her heart rate accelerate, her breathing turned shallow. She shuddered, every instinct telling her to draw her sidearm and bring the Verpine to justice for reducing brave stormtroopers to terror and humiliation. But she was the New Republic now, and these troopers had attempted to commit atrocities. This was necessary. This would lead to Shadow Wing. What's your price? She asked. 2. Jasna Chaddock didn't care for stormtroopers, but the sergeant didn't give her an excuse to exercise her aggression. He walked at the pace she set, never turned to face her or spoke in defiance. He was, if not broken, beaten. Jas could settle for that. She hadn't thought much about Operation Cinder. The Hellion's Dare had been too far from the worlds that suffered, receiving only snippets of news about slaughters carried out by the retreating Empire. She'd felt a reflexive anger, a surge of rage, that had quickly melted into the sea of affronts the Empire committed. It hadn't been the Empire's first genocide, after all. Just the most petty. so it wasn't Cinder that made her loathe the man stumbling in front of her. It was the smaller indignities. The scandoc checks and extortion rackets and beatings she'd suffered back when. Maybe the sergeant was one of the good stormtroopers who never left a rim rat with broken ribs because she looked at him wrong. But what did it matter? He'd chosen to support the Empire as it was, and every stormtrooper was complicit in something. She was out of the House of Strangers and proceeding down a high-walled alley when she halted. She couldn't have said what triggered her wariness. Maybe it was just being trapped between two stone barriers.
"Stop," she said. The sergeant stopped. "We're turning around."
The stormtrooper began to run. Chas cursed. Then she saw a flash of red light, smelled vaporized atmosphere, and felt chips of stone slash her cheek. She didn't see the shooter. Shooters. Whoever it was wasn't at ground level. And there were enough windows and balconies built into the alley walls that there was nowhere she could be sure was safe. She sprinted forward, pumping her legs and feeling the stiffness in her thighs. She'd spent too much time flying and not enough on her feet over the past month, and rapidly overtook the sergeant. She didn't assume the shooters wouldn't kill him, but she expected she could use him as a shield. He put up an anemic struggle as she wrapped her arms around him, yanked him backward, and put her spine against the wall. Particle bolts scorched trails through the air, and when the sergeant went slack, Chas drew her weapon, a KD-30 pistol, more expensive than anything else she'd ever owned, and scanned for a target. She didn't find one. A blaster bolt struck the rock half a meter from her foot. She suddenly regretted drawing her weapon. With one arm around the sergeant, she had no way to reach her comlink and call for help. This wasn't how she wanted to die. Not murdered by stormtroopers on a pointless mission on a nothing planet. She was shaking from the surge of adrenaline, the mix of thrill and frustration. "We go," she snapped, and shoved the sergeant forward. She didn't look back, didn't focus on anything but pushing down the alleyway. She panted for breath, mouth hanging open and body cold with sweat. By the time she emerged into a broader boulevard packed with Abednego pedestrians and merchant stalls, her vision was blurred from exertion and the rush of blood. She was still alive, though. The pedestrians shouted and scattered like startled birds. She didn't understand the language, but she could guess the meaning of the cries. Half a dozen humans, almost always humans with the Empire, that fact was enough to make Chas proud of her Thelan blood, rushed out onto high stairs and landings overlooking the plaza, each in civilian attire and carrying a blaster rifle. Even at a distance, Chas recognized the weapons as E-11s, stormtrooper gear. Chas took the first shot. She missed. Smoke curled up from the stonework beside her target. The KD-30 fired custom rounds instead of particle bolts, each loaded with a virulent acid that could dissolve almost anything. Not even a hut, layered with oil and fat, could survive a shot from the KD-30. But a hut was easier to hit than a stormtrooper, and Chas only had 9 rounds left. She took another shot. This time a stormtrooper howled in agony, but the Imperials were already maneuvering to pin her down. She couldn't run again. A dash across the boulevard would require moving through the kill zone. Unless she abandoned the sergeant. Quell wouldn't be thrilled with that outcome, but Chas wondered if it was her only route to safety. She heard a scream. She hadn't fired her next round. Then another scream, and she risked a glance toward the sounds. Cairo stood on one of the overlooks, lifting an Imperial by the head with both hands. The man writhed in her grip, then sagged. Chas couldn't see what Kairos had done. Snapped his neck, she hoped, though there were more nightmarish possibilities. But when Kairos dropped the body off the ledge of the staircase, it hit stone with the limp thud of a corpse. The man's pain hadn't lasted long. The attackers turned their weapons on Kairos. Kairos moved through the red storm of bolts like an assassin, freezing and then dashing forward, hurling an enemy into a current of blaster fire, or shooting a foe from across the boulevard with the weapon slung around her torso. Chas tried to recognize it between quick shots. A bowcaster, maybe? There was something savage about Kairos' attacks.
Chas realized what when she scanned the corpses around the boulevard and saw that nearly all of them had heads blackened and bloodied to unrecognizability. Then Kairos was at her side, and they were running, dragging the sergeant between them. Chas felt herself putting as much distance between herself and the strange woman as possible. She caught glimpses of dark stains on Kairos's battered cloak. The U-Wing was in sight atop its landing butte when Chas thought to holster her weapon and signal Quell.
"We were followed,"
she panted, feeling the strain on her throat.
"Kairos and I have the trooper, but if they found us..."
"Someone was watching our source,"
Quell replied. She sounded like her thoughts were elsewhere. Chas tried not to resent her for it and failed.
"Get to your ship. Get the U-Wing and the passenger safely into orbit."
"What are you doing?"
Chas asked.
"There's more. The Verpine has a whole freighter full. He's agreed to fly his ship back to the Lodestar. But if there's trouble, he'll need an escort and..."
"You want us to wait?"
"No,"
Quell said. She paused a while.
"Objective is unchanged. Get out of here with a win. Get the passenger into orbit. Rendezvous with Lark and Tencent. I'll make sure the Verpine gets away safely."
It was a bad plan. It was obviously a bad plan, Chas thought, so much so that Quell had to see it. They'd been separated, and now they needed to reunite. But it was Quell's plan. Maybe she saw something Chas didn't.
"Good luck,"
Chas said.
"And move quick. The guys chasing us play dirty."
And apparently so does Kairos, she thought. But at least Kairos was on her side. 3. It wasn't more than a minute after Chasna Chattuck signaled Quell that the cavern came under fire. The entrance was defensible, a tight enough bottleneck that even Quell, with only her rusty blaster skills and a light pistol, could keep the enemy at bay. But it was obvious the foe wasn't fully committed either. The Imperials were waiting for reinforcements, which meant Quell and the Verpine had to leave.
"Now?"
The question came through the comlink. The Verpine was already in the cockpit, anxious to launch.
"No," Quell said. "You'll know when."
She tried not to think of the merchandise aboard the Gatrok 690. She was glad the Verpine hadn't started the ship's engines. She didn't want to inspire the enemy to barrel on through, desperate not to lose the cargo, desperate not to lose friends and comrades. Then a shadow crossed her body, and her ragged hair shifted in the breeze. An engine roared louder than blaster fire. Her X-Wing had arrived. Another disconcerting advantage of flying with an astromech droid. Your ship came when you called. The X-Wing lowered itself into the cavern on its repulsors, barely edging around the freighter. Quell waited until it was 10 meters away, then made her dash. The enemy would pause for an instant to confirm she'd stopped firing, then pursue. If she wasn't under the canopy by the time the Imperials were in the hangar, she'd make an easy target.
"Now!"
she called. The X-Wing hovered in place, canopy open, and D6's dome spinning as the droid scanned its surroundings. Quell leapt and caught a strike foil, already locked into attack mode. As particle bolts lashed past her, she felt the exhaust of the freighter's thrusters against her cheek as she half swung, half fell into the cockpit seat. The transparent metal canopy was already lowering. Then she was in position. Her body still felt uncomfortable in the rebel ship, but her feet located pedals, and her hands, after a moment searching panels, found the controls she needed. She looked through the haze of crimson bolts and saw a squad of Imperials pouring through the cavern entrance. The attackers were in civilian attire, yet they moved with the coordination of army veterans. They weren't the bruised and filthy captives Quell had seen aboard the freighter. Neither were they polished fighters in pressed uniforms and grimly determined faces. They looked desperate. They looked scared. They reminded Quell of the inmates at Traitor's Remorse. One carried a portable rocket launcher. As the woman hefted it onto her shoulder, Quell made her decision and squeezed the trigger on her control yoke. The cavern exploded in fire, and she watched the faces of the soldiers as, one by one, they died to the X-Wing's blasts. She heard no emotion in her voice as she said,
"Quell to squadron. We're lifting off.
4. Will Lark's reservations about the mission changed nothing. When the signal came from Chas, he opened his throttle, checked his course, and made to intercept Chas and Kairos as they emerged from Abednito's atmosphere. He called for Nath to join him. The Y-Wing wasn't built for dogfighting, but the assault craft would be vulnerable on its own. And it was Nath who reminded him,
"What about not authorized for combat operations?"
"The combat operation came to us," Will said. "If you know how to avoid a fight, now's the time to say."
Nath laughed. Will saw the Y-Wing match his